Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Thursday, the 2nd of July. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Vidushan Hantaraja.
Yes, it's me, Vish, and Andy Brassel here. Now, keen Ramble listeners will notice that Jim isn't here. And I did say yesterday that it was going to be me, Vish, and Jim, but he's not feeling too good today. So in comes super sub Andy Brassel. You're like the Adama Traore of the Ramble squad.
And just as stacked.
Now, do you know what? We've been saying in the last kind of couple of weeks since football's come back, there is so much football and it's so hard to keep up with it, and a lot of the games haven't been that great, have they, Vish? But last night, it's a bit nuts, wasn't it? It was pretty good. Potentially some significant results at both the top and bottom of the table. Of course, the West Ham win over Chelsea stands out. Chelsea then missing the chance to go third because Leicester lost to Everton. Bournemouth got thrashed by Newcastle, and the fight for survival is looking bleak for both them and Norwich, who also got thrashed by Arsenal. And you were at the Emirates, Vish, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
What was the performance like? What was it like in the stadium?
The stadium, what was it like? Well,
you've got a great opportunity to make an Arsenal joke here. Don't waste it, Vish.
I'm fighting against every fibre of my being to make a joke about official attendance being 60,000, about it being a bit more jovial than normal. But yeah, it was pretty much of the same. You know, we talked about how we can hear what people are saying, specifically what managers are shouting out to their players. And I think every game that Daniel Farke does, he should be mic'd up and it should go around the stadium, because that man's voice is something else.
It's kind of
like it's like Hans Gruber, but with like a camp, with a really camp Disney twist. Do you know what I mean? Like
Hans Gruber was quite camp, in fairness.
Well, I suppose, yeah. But there's like a Disney quality to Daniel Farke. I think it's when you look at him, because he's got a really big head, but it's quite a welcoming head, if that makes sense.
A welcoming large head.
He looks like he could be a regular panto participant, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's like one of those kind of Japanese like Mononoke cartoons. He's like, it looks like a character from that, doesn't he? With his big eyes and like ginormous.
I'm interviewing him on Saturday before the Norwich Brighton game, and now I'm not going to be able to get that out of my head. So thank you. Thanks for that.
As to the football, yeah, I'm pretty standard. Yeah, Arsenal played pretty well, to be fair. I think it was interesting that their first goal came the same way as their first goal against Southampton, where they're putting pressure on the keeper. And you can tell that Arteta's trying to get them to push up because he keeps shouting it. I think he shouted get at them in three different languages yesterday, which is pretty cool. You know, English, Spanish and French, directed at all those, you know, respective players.
Andy, do you want to do the English, Spanish and French for us?
Oh, yeah, do it.
Well, I think we know Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang would understand all three of them, which I think is quite handy, obviously having been born in France and having a Spanish mum. I wanted to ask you about Aubameyang, because I know you heard, you were speaking to Arteta about him afterwards, Vish, and he gave kind of quite different answers when he talked about it for telly and then to the newspapers afterwards. He sounded ever so jolly and positive in the immediate aftermath of the game. Like, I feel very positive. He loves it here. His family love it here. And then by the time he spoke to you, it was a bit more, well, I don't deal with contracts.
yeah. He's it was very smart. I think the thing that you see managers get right type more often than not is that when they're on TV, they know how much their body language comes across just as much as their words. And he was very, very, not necessarily forthright, but he knew the message he wanted to purvey, and he purveyed that very well. And it was basically that, you know, he likes Aubameyang likes being here, but the decision rests solely in Aubameyang's court, because Arteta says that the club have done their bit to us, I suppose, get him on for a bit longer, or keep him rather. And yeah, he said it doesn't necessarily deal with that, which is a little bit like Harry Redknapp, but it sounds a bit sleeker coming from Mikel Arteta, doesn't it?
I think the way I think about Aubameyang and him in terms of his value in the market has definitely changed, though, because he's 31, as you're pointing out when we were talking about beforehand, Vish. And really, if you think a player on those kind of wages who's so associated with pace as a forward should be becoming less and less valuable. And also, when we spoke when he arrived in Arsenal in the first place, it was because no bigger club wanted him, quite frankly, because he always spoke about his dream of going to Real Madrid. That wasn't an option for him. So it's basically Arsenal or China. And he chose Arsenal, and that's worked out very well for him. But what I think's interesting is, having seen him loads at Saint-Etienne and then at Dortmund, and then seeing him arrive in England and seeing the way he evolved into, rather than being a wide forward, a sort of centre forward, who touches the ball really not that much at all. Now, he's kind of gone in the same direction as Sergio Aguero has in the last year and a half, 2 years, in that now he's bringing back his all-round game that he used to have.
Yeah.
Almost as if he's saying, right, okay, if I'm going to go way into my 30s, it can't all be about my pace. And that, if I was a club that wanted to buy him, would make me feel more interested in him.
Well, scoring his 50th and 51st goals for Arsenal in just 79 games last night just kind of highlighted his importance and just how key he can still be in a squad. Now, the other game in London last night was a feisty one, wasn't it? It was a really good match between West Ham and Chelsea. West Ham doing the double over their West London rivals. West Ham now 3 points clear of the bottom three. It was a crucial result for them. And also could have significant effects at the top of the table as well, because Chelsea, of course, missed the opportunity to go into third place because Leicester lost to Everton. It was a bit of a nuts game, wasn't it, Vish?
Yeah, I was driving back from the Emirates, so I made sure I had it on. And I switched on my radio when just after the goal had been disallowed, but then West Ham had scored. Susie had scored again.
Yeah.
And I don't think I realised just how crazy that VAR decision was until I saw it on TV.
Madness.
And even then, I don't think it really, even now, struck me as having read about it this morning, was just how long they took over VAR to come to a kind of, well, you know, what some would perceive as an incorrect decision. I think it was really impressive, actually. West Ham have capitulated so many times in that situation, just felt a bit sorry for themselves and thought, well, everything's against us and throwing it away. But the fact that they came back from that, and even Chelsea pegging them back with a Willian free kick. I think it's, I wouldn't necessarily say it speaks volume of Moyes, but it certainly speaks volume of the quality of players that they have.
Suchek's reaction was brilliant, wasn't it? When he scored his goal that did count, because he didn't celebrate. He did this, are you going to take it off me thing, didn't he? Do you think that was completely out of line, that decision? Because there's been a lot of pushback against it, hasn't there? Not just from West Ham fans, from fans all over the place, from a lot of journalists. But to me, it seems to be more focused, the criticism, on, as Vish said, the delay, the lag time, and also the way it made us feel. I wonder if there'd be such a kickoff about it. Say if it was the same decision, but it had been a Chelsea goal chalked off and it had only taken a minute to come to the decision. Would there be the same thing? Is it an issue with the decision or an issue with the frustration that we felt of something that, oh, this is exciting, it's going to be a shock, doesn't happen?
For me, it was the fact that, like you've both pointed out, how long it took, but also the lack of knowing what they were actually looking at. When you're watching it live, it wasn't clear and it wasn't pointed out on TV. What are they actually looking at? Are they looking at Antonio offside? Are they looking at Souček offside? But what's the issue here? Are they looking at whether he's in the line of the goalkeeper? There was no real explanation. Gary Neville was on COCOMs and he didn't have a clue. He was going, what are they even looking at? I don't know what they're looking at here. And I think that, for football fans watching, is what's so frustrating, that you then, there is so much kind of unknown about it. And then when the decision is made and they rule out a goal, when it's so kind of dubious, that's what annoys us, I think.
So what's the solution? Do the VAR team need to communicate with the crowd and the television audience? Is that the solution?
I actually think it is. I think communication is one of the biggest issues with VAR. Michail Antonio, at the end of the game, it was only... when he found out, I think it was Jeff Shreves who was at the game for Sky, that was when he found out why it was ruled out. He had no idea until Jeff Shreves said, well, actually, it was your head that was offside. And he was like...
He was brilliant, by the way. He was brilliant. His laughter in that interview, it was contagious.
Yeah. He's got a really infectious personality, Michail Antonio. But yeah, he kind of laughed and thought about it and then was like, well, you know, we won, so what are we going to do? But I think the communication element is key. In cricket, where there is a decision review system, as soon as it's sent up to the equivalent of the video umpire, then everyone in the ground can hear the conversation between, and at home as well, can hear the conversation between the umpires who are on the field who made the original decision and the TV umpire. It's shown on the big screen as well, which makes a huge difference, because even, you know, we had a VAR situation at the Emirates yesterday for a penalty, and the screen is just, as we've seen it before, is just VAR checking penalty, no penalty, penalty. And I think it would be... fans are still going to complain about it if they get a goal chalked off, but at least they know why. I think we've got to stop treating fans like children and actually, you know, give them some truth, because then that way we can all move and sort out VAR, you know, move in the same direction and sort out VAR together, so that we don't feel it just doesn't feel like it's being done on the hoof.
But doesn't this change the whole feeling inside the stadium? I mean, one of the things, and it's something that's not, well, until relatively recently, it's not been mentioned in England that much, but the reason that a lot of German fan groups are so strongly against VAR is they feel that it's a dreadful experience for the people inside the stadium. And I think that's right. But even if you did have that level of communication, that completely affects the whole atmosphere. It's like, kind of like, you know, when you go to a big match or a cup final, and at the beginning there's just this deafening tannoy that just drowns out everything, and it's like, no, the supporters are meant to make the atmosphere, not Ready to Go by Republica or, you know, even something as great as London Calling or something like that. It's meant to be the fans that make the atmosphere.
Yeah, well, in case you didn't see the clarification, this is what the PGMOL clarified on that incident on Souček's goal being ruled out. They said the on-field decision was to award the goal, but the VAR advised the referee that Antonio was in an offside position and directly in the line of vision of Kepa. So essentially, it's been ruled out because Antonio was blocking Kepa's vision and he was offside.
Yeah.
Is he blocking his vision, though? He was lying down on the floor.
Yeah.
He was trying to play the ball, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, that is the key thing, isn't it? He was trying to, like, scoop the ball from under him. But even that explanation, even that, if that was articulated to fans, as it is in the NFL, actually, the only conversation we hear with the NFL referees is at the end when they've made the decision, ruling on the course, on the field stands, so-and-so's got the ball, 10-yard penalty, whatever. That, even that alone, that seems to help the players. Antonio had no idea yesterday, so I think that's something they should think about incorporating in the future.
Credit, though, to West Ham, as you already said, Vish, that despite how frustrating that situation must have been, they thought they were about to take the lead, the goal doesn't stand. You then go, Chelsea got the other end of the pitch, they win a penalty, they score the penalty. Credit to West Ham for not letting their heads drop, considering the situation they're in the Premier League, just how important getting a result last night was, that they managed to somehow get themselves back into the match.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think we were talking about this, weren't we, Jules, before, with reference to other coaches, well, maybe with reference to Eddie Howe, actually, weren't we? Which we'll and Steve Bruce, which we'll come on to talk about in a bit. But I think it can be quite tempting for the focus to go back to David Moyes, and there'll be people out there going, oh, maybe he's not that bad after all. This was a crazy game that I don't think you can necessarily apply logic to. And what won it for West Ham is the fact that, that they do actually have some really good players. To be able to pull Yarmolenko off the bench and, yeah, he's inconsistent, and that's something that's...
Some player, though, isn't he?
Yeah, dogged him like through much of his senior career. Like, in any given moment, he can make it happen. And I think Mikel Antoniovich, didn't he, made a nod to it in that post-match interview, where he's totally out of breath, by the way. He's being asked these questions by Jeff Shreves, and he felt he wanted to go, give me 30 seconds, I'm just going to get some air into my lungs. But, you know, he was saying, with the players we've got, there's no way we should be in this situation.
Yeah, yeah. That third goal, actually, to win it, was perhaps the best example of what those players as individuals can do together, because Antonio never stops running. I think he's the only player you can actively describe accurately as a nuisance. That seems to be his modus operandi. He's like, right, I'm just going to piss people off here. I'm going to do it within the laws. Even the fact that his goal, he went down for a penalty and then ended up getting on the end of, you know, the cross that kind of followed it.
It's the rare combination of skillful and awkward, isn't he?
Yeah, and definitely more skewed towards awkward. He's kind of he's the type of bloke who'd fall down a set of stairs and land on his feet somehow. He'd be like, how do you do that? And he would have no idea. But that goal was perfect, because he held up the ball really well, chested it back to Fornals, got it back from Fornals, and played a pass that I didn't know he had in him, to be fair, because it was decent ball to pick out Yarmolenko. I don't know what Antonio Rudiger was doing. It's like I reckon if I was stood out there with Yarmolenko,
Vish.
You know, I think this lad's got left foot from what I've seen. He'll still get past me, but I at least seem to make the effort to put him on his right foot. But
yeah, if you're going to get Arjen Robben'd, you want to get Arjen Robben'd by Arjen Robben.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, spot on.
Well, it was an incredible finish to the match, and the momentum this could give West Ham now in terms of their hopes for survival, and looking at their next four matches, they look winnable as well. Away at Newcastle, home to Burnley, away at Norwich, and then at home to Watford. They finished the season against Manchester United and Aston Villa, but you never know how important that result just could be. Let's move on and talk about another one of the matches, a team that are down there really struggling, Bournemouth losing 4-1 to Newcastle. We were chatting to producer Charlie, weren't we, just beforehand, and he's a Newcastle fan, and he said it's actually weird talking about how good Newcastle are going forward at the moment, but they were brilliant again.
They were, but I mean, that level of resistance. I mean, you know, people saying about, there was Ashley Cole, wasn't it, saying about no one wants to jump in on Alan Saint-Maximin because they'll become a meme. But I mean, still, what for that second goal, the Longstaff goal, he's got three defenders in front of him. He didn't have to turn on the afterburners. He sort of almost did a light jig around them rather than a proper dribble.
It was so
easy, though. Didn't you think?
I love that. I love the idea that St. Maximum's quality is kind of underpinned by a fan base that makes memes of the people he destroys. It's like, you know, there are two of the most powerful groups on the internet right now are St. Maximum fans and K-pop fans. In terms of how they're able to influence things. I did. It's funny though, like, maybe I'm just thinking about what it was like in the playground, but no one wants to be nutmegged, do they?
Never. And
players are so online now that I wonder if it's part of their thinking. They kind of, I mean, I feel like that's doing a detriment to their professionalism, but I did find that fascinating. And on the meme subject, Bournemouth are basically that yellow dog with a bowler hat who's sitting in the room drinking a cup of tea while it's on fire saying everything's fine. But yeah, Andy, as you were saying, Bournemouth just made it far too easy for them. It's you know, they've been a shambles for a while now, and they're just destined to go down, especially when you look at their run in. They're really up against it. If they do somehow emerge unscathed from the bottom three, then it'll be genuinely be one of the great turnarounds, especially with so little time to go.
What do you think it is? Is it a lack of ideas from Eddie Howe? Is it a lack of kind of putting fight into them? What's the situation? What's the problem with Bournemouth? Because I actually thought, looking at some of the teams before coming back into football, I was looking at Bournemouth and thinking they've been fortunate that they've had the break in a sense, because it's allowed David Brooks to get fit again, and we know just what a talent he is. Obviously, the Ryan Fraser situation hasn't helped things at Bournemouth, and I think that could be maybe something that's affecting the dressing room. But I actually looked at them and thought, when you look at the teams fighting for survival, you're always looking at the teams that can score goals and you're thinking they're the ones that have a chance. When you look at Bournemouth's frontline, I know Callum Wilson wasn't available for the game against Newcastle because he's suspended, but you look at Callum Wilson and Josh King, David Brooks put him into that, Harry Wilson on set pieces, and you think, actually, they've probably got goals in them, but yeah, for some reason it's just not happened.
Yeah, and it's a weird thing because I think it seems to have gone wrong since Eddie Howe's tried to make them defend properly. Because every time I've seen them, I said this on here a couple of weeks back, every time they've tried to defend properly, they look like they can't do the other half of the game at all. And I think that's a real issue for them. But, you know, we were talking about the fact that maybe public opinion and Bournemouth public opinion, most importantly, is turning against Eddie Howe. Have they just left it too late? I mean, if they fired him now, I mean... Get who you like. It's not, you could get literally any coach. It's not going to make any difference. As Vish says, that running is hellish.
Yes,
you can look at that and you could like really without much effort make a case that they wouldn't get another point for the rest of the season.
I saw a couple of calls on Twitter for Harry Redknapp to come in and save them, and also,
well, he lives down there,
Big Sam,
doesn't he?
Yeah, Sam local. Allardyce as well. Surely not.
Well, I mean, they're just going to get into that desperate shame cycle that all teams do down there where they just end up hiring from the same three. I wonder with Eddie Howe if it's just a quite natural stagnation of listening to the same message over and over again and suddenly, and it just being watered down through every season, really, because he's been there since 2012. He's been pretty comfortable in terms of they used to play a really attractive attacking football, and that's how they get the majority of their points at home. And as Andy says, yeah, defending just isn't for them. And they face a quandary that all teams face, even a team that spent as much time in the league as Bournemouth, where they think, right, if we actually want to stay here, we need to evolve. And if that's not going to come through spending money, which they have, and they've spent it badly, then it's for trying to make ourselves more robust from the back, because ultimately, if you don't concede goals, you're going to be in a better position. And they just haven't been able to do that. And I wonder, actually, if that is a blind spot in Eddie Howe's coaching philosophy, because, you know, if you look at some managers who come through the ranks and come through the leagues, a lot of the time they do that by playing attacking football. And it's only when they get to a level like the Premier League where they have to start thinking about defending. And we've seen that with quite a few promoted teams recently, actually. And if, you know, Aston Villa spring to mind, Fulham last year are a great example of that. And I wonder if it's something that he himself might fancy just going away on his own without the pressures of managing a club, you know, part ways with Bournemouth, and maybe, you know, I suppose, educate himself sounds like I'm being a bit flippant there. But do you know what I mean? Just kind of, I suppose,
I do.
Accrue that kind of knowledge.
I think it's where managers get good, isn't it? Where coaches get good when they go and look at other clubs, look at clubs in other countries, and just expand their mind. And of course, the fact is that when he walks away, or if he walks away from Bournemouth at some point, I don't think people are going to do the usual thing where, you know, you think the last impression lasts in football and people are going to say that he's the guy who took Bournemouth down. I think people, after 6 months, a year, whatever, they'll look back and say, actually, he was the guy who kept Bournemouth in the Premier League for however long a time. And you know what it's like? If you're a head coach and you sit out for 4 months, 6 months, 8 months or whatever, your legend sort of augments when, you know, you're the chairman or supporter of a struggling team and you think, oh God, oh man, shit. He'd be amazing. He'd change it around.
Yeah.
Where's he? What's happened to him?
Yep.
You've got to remember as well, Eddie Howe is only 42. So he could legitimately take a couple of years out of the game to do what he wants to do. Maybe take a gap year. I bet he hasn't taken a gap year.
never taken a gap year in his whole life.
Do a bit of interrailing, mate, when the trains open up and come back.
Backpacking, mate. What about Newcastle, though? 4 goals scored last night. I know we've talked about Bournemouth making it easy for them to do that, but Jamie Evo 10 tweeted us at Football Ramble on Twitter saying 4-0. Pete must be furious. This is obviously before Bournemouth scored their consolation goal. Spare a thought for Pete Donaldson today. He's probably absolutely fuming at home. But one of the things we've been kind of paying attention to since the restart is how players celebrate their goals without fans in the stadium. Last night, a couple of fun ones. Dwight Gale did a cupped ear celebration to an empty stadium. Lazaro shushed the crowd as well, even though there was clearly no one there. Isaac Hayden missed an outrageously bad open goal. So Newcastle's still a bit mental, aren't they?
That was after Lazaro absolutely clattered the bar.
Yeah.
That was very satisfying. There was one of my favourite empty stand celebrations. I think it came in League One or League Two. It was when a player ran over to the stands, jumped to the fence, and then sat in one of the chairs and started applauding.
No.
Which is genius.
I didn't see that. More of that. Brilliant. Awesome. Well, look, we're going to be previewing the games in the Premier League tonight and seeing just what that loss against West Ham last night for Chelsea means in terms of the European places, because Tottenham face Sheffield United later. It's Man City against the champions Liverpool as well. And we're going to be delving into Europe as well.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Join me, Pete Donaldson, and Japan-based YouTuber Chris Broad every Wednesday as we offer the lowdown on what's happening in one of the most unique and exciting countries in the world. The Abroad in Japan podcast is home to all things Japan, from things to do...
So today we've come to you guys with 12 places in Japan that nobody knows about.
...to the bizarre...
When I moved into my new apartment last year, the police guy came to my door, knocked on my door, I opened it, it was a policeman, and he said to me, in English, I am Japanese policeman. And I went, that's the best introduction you could possibly do as a Japanese policeman.
To the downright filthy.
And for those of you who don't know what a tenga is... Pete and I did discuss how to describe it best before doing the podcast, and I'll let Pete describe what a tenga is. What is it, Pete?
It's a solo male silicon-based ordinist's aid, so to speak.
Brilliant.
New episodes every single Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Abroad in Japan is a Stakhanov production.
You're listening to the Football Ramble on Thursday with me, Jules Breach. Vish is here with me, as is Andy. Let's start off, before we get on to tonight's Premier League games, the football never ends. Let's talk about last night in Europe, Andy. There was one game that stood out. Inter 6, Brescia 0.
Yes, Manchester United B 6, Brescia 0. And... I really wanted to bring up this with Vish, actually, because it was an eye-catching performance from Inter against... Well, it's kind of going back to Bournemouth, really. Brescia are absolutely doomed. They've had it. And Inter had a super time with them, especially after taking the lead early on. Alexis Cross, back post, brilliant volley from Ashley Young. Ashley Young set up another one later. Victor Moses had a great game. Christian Eriksen got a goal. It really was a Premier League fest. Alexis scored from the penalty spot as well after Victor Moses was fouled, going back to the second goal. It really is interesting, Vish, to see these guys who were just deadwood at Manchester United. And of course, we haven't even talked about Romelu Lukaku. He had quite a quiet night in the end, and they didn't really need
him
to be his
best. 6 goals, they didn't need him. None of them were his.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, he had the shot that was, I think it was him who had the shot that was saved for Eriksen to tap in at the second attempt.
He'll take that as an assist.
He certainly should.
It counts in FPL, doesn't it?
It does in FPL, yeah.
Really?
It does. Andy, you're learning. I'm going to train you for FPL next time.
Don't do FPL. It's the worst thing.
It's the best thing.
No, because it makes you it makes you care about things you don't really care about. And then it makes you sad like about things you never really care about.
Like a Crystal Palace clean sheet. Yes!
Yeah.
Come on!
Think of how hard the world is now. No one needs extra sadness in their life.
Well, the other night, it was the only thing that cheered me up about Manchester United beating us is because I had Fernandes in my team. So I was like, to be fair, I got
Listen,
two goals.
Listen, how sadistic it makes me.
No, it's terrible, isn't it?
Wishing ill on her own team.
No, I didn't wish ill, but it was a tiny little kind of like silver lining on that cloud. I was like, do you know what? We may have lost to Man United, but I got 15 points from Bruno Fernandes.
It was funny, actually, because obviously we're in this socially distanced world at the moment. When I'm doing co-commentary on Bundesliga matches, I'm in a separate booth to both the presenter and the main commentator. And before I was doing the Werder Bremen-Köln game on Saturday, I could hear the two of them discussing, obviously quite loudly because you're in separate booths, their Bundesliga fantasy teams. I felt pretty...
Were you a bit left out, Andy? Yeah. See, don't do it to yourself. Get involved next year. We'll have a ramble league. I'll win.
That's why you set it up.
No, not at all. I'm actually really not that good. I just love it and I'm obsessed with it. But it's good fun.
You're a pusher.
I'm trying to sell it to you. I did used to work on a shopping channel. Can you see what I'm doing? The thing is, though, is it does actually give you an appreciation for the games that you kind of wouldn't normally be interested in. And I quite like that because sometimes on a Sunday you think, I want to watch football today, but my team aren't playing. But then... if there's a team that are playing that you wouldn't normally have any interest in, say it's Burnley Crystal Palace, not going to be the best game, but I'd Nick Pope in goal. So I've got a clean sheet, I'm buzzing.
I don't think that's to do with fantasy league at all. I think it's to do with how early you wake up in the morning. I woke up at 4:45 this morning and I did my morning workout to a replay of Tambov versus Zenit. In the Russian Premier League.
So
it totally depends on what time you wake up. But Vish, I wanted to ask you about these Manchester United players. I mean, it's quite tempting. When we were talking about Moyes there, when people have been talking about Steve Bruce, and there's been quite a strong push recently to say, what an incredible job he's done. And, you know, he has done a good job in the circumstances. It doesn't persuade me that he would be the man to lead Newcastle United forward if they had loads of money to buy players, etc., etc. There's also been a bit of a reappraisal of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer recently because of Manchester United's turn up in form. I mean, some of us would say it's to do with one particular midfielder who they might have bought in the transfer window. I mean, it always said something about United and what was going so badly for them in the first part of the season. The fact that Lukaku and to a lesser extent Alexis, because he's had injuries, and especially Ashley Young, how valuable they've been for a big club that's chasing trophies. What do you make of that as a Manchester United fan?
Well, it's weird because the Manchester United clearly established a sewage pipe that ran straight to Sunderland. and that was quite effective for a while until they got relegated. I think it's...
If Alexis had accepted that, he could have been a Netflix superstar,
yeah,
couldn't
imagine that. Banging out to some Ibiza hits at the Stadium of Light. The fascinating thing about those United players is that they really speak of the kind of not just muddled thinking, but also the turnover in managers. They're all very, very different players that are bought for very different reasons.
Yeah.
So Alex Ferguson bought Ashley Young as a wide man to kind of get us, I suppose, not better at crossing, but just try and, we had to play a different way when Ronaldo was off. And so that seemed the most effective way of doing it, bringing in Ashley Young, who was a pretty reliable 8 out of 10 winger. Turned, and then, you know, through kind of Moyes, Van Gaal, Mourinho, became a fullback, and you know, a similar path that Antonio Valencia had as well. So on his particular situation, I think it's really interesting because he's clearly a very effective fullback, and maybe I'm thinking about it because it's Inter or Italian football, but the Italian football seem to really love these fullbacks who can play on both left and right. And also are pretty good crosses as well, because that tends to be where most of your width comes from in Serie A.
I mean, that's the thing, actually. When he was playing against Brescia last night, he's playing as a left wing back. And I do think the hard yards under Van Gaal, misery as it must have been.
Louis van Gaal's army! Always time for that.
Yeah.
Always time.
I think it's actually worked out for him, though, because honestly, he looked like prime Watford or Villa Ashley Young. Admittedly, it was against Brescia, and like I said, they're not great. But it's interesting because going into next season, they'll be playing a back three again, I'm sure. They've already signed Ashraf Hakimi. He's been incredible for Dortmund, for the right side. So you could have Hakimi on one side and Young on the other, which is quite the mix, isn't it?
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say about, you know, even having Sanchez and Lukaku there, usually those players end up at different clubs because, you know, there's more value in having Lukaku. Mm. Sanchez is on his way out and Young's obviously, you know, as old as he is. So the fact that they're all at the same club doing quite well is really peculiar. It's like, I don't really know what it's like. It's like they had a coupon and they thought, well, you know, if you get him, you can get Ashley Young for free as well.
I
might as well, actually. And then like, Alexis Sanchez was there with the chocolate buttons at the till. And like, fuck it, you know, you're getting here as well.
I can't give you cash change. I can give you more vouchers. Yeah.
I love me a good voucher. All right, let's move on to tonight's matches in the Premier League then. A couple of good ones. We're going to save Man City against Liverpool for last, but let's talk Spurs, Sheffield United first, because both of these teams have a game in hand, of course. This is their Spurs' third match since the restart. And the winner of this game, if there is one, can actually go into seventh. Now, because of Chelsea losing last night and because of Leicester losing last night, this kind of race for the top four now, because I think when we started football back a couple of weeks ago, it was more kind of a who's going to get fifth. And I think most people were thinking Leicester and Chelsea had it nailed to finish in the top four. Now it looks completely open from third, almost down to potentially 10th for a European spot. And the way things are, because we still don't know the result of Manchester City and whether or not they'll be able to play in the Champions League next year, it means that European places could go down as low as 8th. This is quite exciting. So I think it puts quite a lot onto this match between Spurs and Sheffield United, Andy.
It does to an extent, but the way that Wolves have got results since we've come back just makes me think they're just waiting for their moment to maul everyone. You know, you look how efficient they've been as well and how high performing their best players are. You think they can pick teams off without actually playing that well, Wolves? I think that's a huge advantage for them. I don't know. I think I want to see a little bit more from Sheffield United, a bit like Leicester. I don't want to see their season peter out. And in terms of, if you're looking at it as totally from a neutral perspective rather than, say, a Spurs fan's perspective, a Sheffield United win here would be great. That would really shake it up, because I think everyone is kind of half expecting them to fade away now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Certainly I am, yeah. It's almost like they really needed that momentum to carry over, and the break just hasn't helped them at all, as you mentioned with Leicester as well. I'm quite excited because I think, judging from what Jose Mourinho has been saying in the last couple of days, I reckon we'll see Tanguy and Ndombele tonight.
Yes.
And I'm very excited about that, because it would be such a shame, I think, if the Premier League lost someone of his talents.
Agreed.
We've not seen enough of him yet in a Spurs shirt.
Well, no, exactly. And I think it was really interesting that Mourinho said that he was asked about his personality, and Mourinho kind of toned down a lot of the noises we've been hearing behind the scenes, and basically said, you know, 6 months is no time to judge someone's personality. He can still come back and be a Spurs player. There's no reason why he can't. And it was kind of unusually diplomatic from Jose, and there was. It's always tempting to read between the lines with stuff he says, but that's probably the most sincere I've heard him for a while. It'd be really exciting if he, I don't know if he's fit enough to start, if he is great, or just to see him get a half, because, yeah, I want him in the league. I want to see more of him.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of talk ever since the beginning of Mourinho arriving at Spurs that it's going to be different this time. It's not all about the market. It's about me working with players. It's about me working on players. And Ndombele's still pretty young. You know, you think he's had, what, two seasons at the top level, really, with Lyon before he arrived here. So clearly he's got an enormous amount to offer, and they've really missed him this season. And also, we talked about Bruno Fernandes before, that, like, what an area of need this was for Tottenham before the start of the season. And it's not suddenly not become an area of need for Tottenham, has it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. In the week, Kieran Trippier was talking about how big a loss Moussa Dembélé was. And Ndombele is probably the closest in the world maybe right now to what specifically to what Dembele did for that Spurs side. And they have him, and you know, to utilise him as effectively as possible, surely in their best interest. I was actually going to ask you, Andy, was there any sense before this move that he was Dembele was a difficult player or someone who didn't like putting in that graft? That seems to be the case now from the outside.
He'd come a long way in a very short time, but I mean, he did a great job both at Amiens and Lyon. But to get to Amiens, to get to professional football, there are a lot of academy moments that didn't work out for him. There are a lot of people who thought he wouldn't make it as a pro. So the fact that he got from getting to the top flight with Amiens and then getting to Champions League level with Lyon, it seemed to happen in the blink of an eye. And I think that's the thing. He's almost regressed to, you know, pre-pro and Dombele, really, which is a bit of a shame. But it's clearly got something to do with management as well. I mean, when you come in for that amount of money and then the coach disappears, and we know what an engaging coach Pochettino is, we know what he can do for players, and you can't really, I think, put into words how different it must be going from Pochettino, who's mm-hmm. that sort of nurturer, to Mourinho, which, you know, discuss all the qualities of Mourinho that you like. He is not a nurturer. I remember Karim Benzema saying at Real Madrid, the only words he said to me for the first season was bouge ton cul, which means move your ass in French. And that was it.
Right.
Well, it's interesting because as a United fan, the way he dealt with Luke Shaw was quite harrowing, actually, yeah. But one of the things I think he got away with in that instance was that Luke Shaw had come from Southampton and was clearly glad to be at United, and so would be really receptive to any kind of insight, even if it bordered on abuse. Whereas I wondered now with Mourinho, so many people, specifically players, are so up to speed with his methods and so anti his methods that I reckon people would arrive at his club or be at a club when he arrives and already have this idea of what exactly it's going to be like. So even if he does try and change his ways, there's an element of like, well, I'm not, you know...
It's like a bit of both sides. There's a bit of perception as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I reckon that some of the attitudes would be like, oh, fuck, he's going to treat me like he did that Luke Shaw at Manchester United. But, you know, I'm a much better player than that.
Do you reckon if he scores against Sheffield United, Jules, he'll do the shush celebration?
I hope so. That's something I'm waiting for. That is the...
And Dombele to Mourinho.
Yeah, just to anyone.
That's the early kickoff. I was going to say 6 o'clock, Sheffield United against Tottenham. The late kickoff tonight, it's Manchester City against the champions Liverpool, and there will be a guard of honour at the Etihad for Liverpool to walk out onto the pitch. How do you feel about this?
Well, Pep Guardiola insists. It's tradition, isn't it?
Big fan, because back in 2007, Manchester United had a guard of honour at Stamford Bridge against Mourinho Chelsea, and Sir Alex Ferguson switched the entire lineup so that it was Kieran Lee, Dongfang Zhu and Thomas Kuszak as part of that guard of honour, and
oh,
it was absolutely majestic.
Dongfang Zhu?
Yeah. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was also part of that.
Really?
Yeah. Gabriel Heinze was the captain. It was, there's a photo on, there's a photo, invariably it's probably doing the rounds on Twitter actually right now, but it's of, you can just see the back of Dong Fanju's shirt, which just had Dong on it, and Terry is clapping and just staring him daggers. It's absolutely incredible.
Oh, I actually can't wait for this tonight. Can't wait.
Well, the thing is, Manchester City haven't got any option other than to change their first team, have they? To do the guard of honour.
Yeah.
But to change their team a little bit, because there's no Fernandinho, he's suspended, Aguero's injured. And I wonder if it is a bit of a peer into the future for Manchester City, because those are two cornerstones who, well, Guardiola was quite open, wasn't he, in the press conference. At some point, they're going to have to be replaced.
Mm. It's interesting, and we now know that Sané is definitely officially going to be leaving. He's got that deal to buy Munich, hasn't he?
They love a winger.
That's, you know, I'm not totally up to speed with the machinations of that deal, but that seems... a criminal price tag for an unbelievable winger.
Was it 50 million?
Yeah. And also, how did it decline so much at City that he's been able to go for this price?
Well, he's only got a year left on his contract, of course, and he made clear that he wasn't going to sign again.
But that's what I mean. Like, why was it... how did they get to that stage? Because he was so good for City, and he gives them such a different dynamic as someone who can also... you know, play intricately in a small space and just stretch play so well. So, but better than anyone. He's one of the best dribblers I've seen in the Premier League recently.
Really good fantasy asset. Oh, sorry.
Well, they call it, oh, it's a great differential pick.
Well, I guess a huge part of it is maybe he felt they were never really properly invested in him. Like that he, right. There must have been a degree of frustration that he never felt first choice. But I mean, in a way, they did show a great amount of faith in him in the amount of money they spent on him in the first place. I remember, and it's not often you feel this in the modern transfer market, and having seen what a prospect he was at Schalke, he was still a prospect when they bought him, and they invested a lot of money in him. And I remember thinking, shit, that is a lot of money. And I guess, well, you know, we talked about it with Ndombele and Mourinho. So much of it is trust. And I think as well, after the way that he didn't make it for the 2018 World Cup, and that was far more of a big deal here than it was in Germany. So people in Germany were like, well, he's been shit for the national team. Why would we pick him? You know, no one felt that it was, and clearly Germany had huge issues at the 2018 World Cup. I don't think picking Sané would or wouldn't have influenced what actually went down. But there was definitely an outcry here of, oh, imagine having someone like that off the bench. It almost feels, and maybe he feels, that he was more valued outside the club than he was inside it sometimes.
This is going to sound like I'm stirring the pot, because I am.
Go on, stir the pot.
I've got it out, the cauldron's bubbling. Does it not bow, or, you know, presumably it doesn't bow particularly well for Pep Guardiola that a player like Sané with such a high ceiling doesn't want to work for him? Or does it? Or is it unrelated?
Maybe. I mean, I think there was definitely a feeling at Manchester City as well that maybe it was due to him feeling discouraged, but his attitude wasn't great. He was late a lot. And clearly, I think this is one of those things where, as you say, when a player who you were asking 100 million for last year goes for, what, less than half that, I think that there's definitely a lot of PR posturing from both sides. And there will be Sané and his people going, oh, well, he didn't feel the love. And Manchester City going, well, he didn't give a shit. He was always late for stuff.
Yeah.
So, and the truth is probably somewhere in between, you know?
Yeah. What about for Liverpool then tonight? Because, of course, they've won the title. First one in 30 years. It's their opportunity to play their first match since then. They're just going to want to go out there and have fun with their football. And from what we know of Jurgen Klopp, because there's lots of kind of different ways you can look at this. It's like, well, we've won the league now. Are we going to just chill out and maybe bring in some of the youngsters and give them a chance, give some other players a chance to play? Or are Liverpool actually going to go out there and try and win the record for the most points in a season? I think they can get to 107 if they win all of their remaining games. That means that they can beat Manchester City's record. From what we know of Jurgen Klopp in the Premier League so far, I think it's the latter. I think they're going to want to win the records.
Yeah, I also think if they want to really be taken seriously as a big club, they've got to take this particular part seriously.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to jokingly say it'd be really funny if they were like just, you know, mashed up and, you know, from all their frivolities and celebrations.
Do what Brighton did when we basically got promotion to the Premier League and then lost pretty much every game after that and didn't go up as champions. We bottled it. We basically just got hammered.
Right, yeah.
On the plus side, at least you're over it.
Yeah, you know, whatever. It's fine. It's absolutely fine.
But this is kind of the period where actually bad habits can creep in and actually permeate into next season. And yeah, they want to lay down a marker, first league in 30 years, but also they want to get the points record. They want to show that they're to be taken seriously. They're just a one and done club.
Yeah.
I think they're going to go for it. And like Klopp has a genuine chance here to assert a proper dominance for the next 3 to 4 years.
And it's a psychological thing as well, isn't it? Because they've got the drop on Manchester City in recent meetings, and that goes back to before. Really, they were a genuine title contender.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that helps they've been buoyed by, even though they're not involved in it at all, was seeing what Chelsea did yesterday, because I think there are still definitely reservations over Frank Lampard as a top-flight manager. So while they did beat them to the punch with Werner, while they have got Ziyech and might invest further in the summer, they know that actually this is the time where teams are building and they're already fully formed, so they can really stretch out and get some space.
Should be a fascinating match. Looking forward to it. I reckon there's going to be quite a few goals in that one. Man City, Liverpool.
Let's hope so.
I hope so. Right, well, that's it from us. Looking forward to the Premier League matches tonight. Spurs against Sheffield United, Man City against the champions, Liverpool. That is all from us. Vish, Andy, thank you very much. I'm off to Brushton Cool. That's the move my ass. See? I love something. Was that good?
Very good.
Thank you.
Was that right?
Brushton Cool.
Brushton Cool.
Brushton Cool sounds like some kind of dodgy rum punch.
I'll have one of those as well. It's officially my weekend now. Thanks, guys. Tomorrow on the preview show, Marcus, Andy, you're back, and Luke Moore are going to be here, and we'll see you tomorrow.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.